Week 5, COVID-19 shutdown.
Did you say I had to get up?
Well, I think we're doing this thing.
Okay.
So I'm Brian.
I'm Sarah.
We got it right this time.
Yay!
I guess you just need some good, a lot of good rest. So, we're doing this thing. We're doing this thing every week. During this, we are talking to people all around the country about what it's like in their area, and everybody has a little bit of expertise in something that is an interesting take on everything. So, last week we were in the Pacific Northwest. We're going thousands of miles to the middle of the country to our little area,
Dayton, Ohio,
and we are talking to
Chad Wells,
who owns a small business in the Central Business District in Dayton, Ohio. It's a tattoo shop. And
Wells & Company Custom Tattoo.
Yep. And you can find him online. I got to look up his little link real quick. You can check out their website at wellsandco.tattoo. Now, his conversation, what would you say about his conversation?
Well, he's a very insightful, very caring person.
I mean, and he had just a lot of write-on to talk about, I guess. A lot of write-on to talk about. I coined that phrase, by the way. I think what's most interesting is, there's a lot of points that are really interesting. One that kind of stands out in my brain is we were talking about how tattoo artists might be a little bit more aware and on it when it comes to cross-contamination than, say, your ER nurse or your dentist. And some of the examples that were given in the conversation are amazing, because tattoo shops and tattoo artists are looked at a little bit more critical than your the dentist down the road, for example.
Yeah, you kind of take for granted that they're going to do the right things, where you would watch a tattoo artist. I think it might be the other way around.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're not seeing tattoo artists throwing their gloves in the parking lot at the grocery store.
Neither are the healthcare workers. I think that might be the general public.
Yeah, that would be. So anyways, do you want to cut to this one, or should I?
Let's go ahead and watch.
No, I wanted to cut to that one.
What do you mean cut to it?
Okay, so I'm cutting to it. So check it out.
My name's Chad Wells, Chadwells, and I'm in Dayton, Ohio.
So you're in Dayton, Ohio, and we were just kind of talking. You have a wife and kids. How many kids do you have?
I do. Two daughters. I have two daughters.
And how old are they?
15 and 10.
So we're in entering week three of this whole shutdown. Yeah. So what have you seen? What's it been like for you?
So it's been wild. You know, I have a tattoo shop in Dayton called Wells & Company Custom Tattoo. And when the word sort of went around that everything was happening and people should start using, you know, we weren't forced to shut down initially. It was just, you know, try to social distance and yada yada. We had a talk amongst all of the artists and I as to what we were going to do about it, and a few of us wanted to continue to work but safely, and as safely as we could, and some of us were ready to not work. So we switched over for a week to like a private appointment only thing. We weren't allowing any people in. We're right down the block from the bus hub, the RTA bus hub. So you can imagine we get a lot of people popping in that want to use the bathroom and get a drink of water and just stop in to, you know, soak up the heat in the winter and the air conditioning in the summer because they're outdoors. And we're a big space, so we generally allow that to a certain degree. You know, I let people pop in and, you know, charge their phones or whatever. We locked the doors for a week, and I kind of just hung out and babysat the shop while these artists did their private appointments. And then as things started to progress and get worse, it looked like we were all going to stop tattooing on our own for a little while. And then DeWine, the governor, put out the order that, you know, not all non-essential businesses had to close. And so we were forced to close. And, you know, it feels like it's a little bit more incremental, gradual stuff every day through all of this. At first it was like, well, maybe we'll be closed for a week or two. It's a forced vacation. We'll hang out at home. And then they close more stuff and they close more stuff. And just every day they're trickling out a little bit more information and a little bit more, stuff that we're supposed to do to stay safe. And, so we're homeschoolers. So we're already used to that part of it. A lot of our friends were hit with, you know, their multiple kids are coming home now and they don't, you know, who do they get for childcare? How do they do the school thing? All of that. We kind of already had that, on lockdown. You don't realize how much the little things like your kids going to 4-H club or, you know, just being able to run to McDonald's and get chicken nuggets instead of making dinner or whatever. Like those things have all, you know, we stopped immediately. Like I know the fast food places and the pizza delivery is still up and running, but my wife has asthma. We also live in with my in-laws who are both, have battled cancer and stuff like that. So we've got a household of people that could potentially be really up the creek if they get it. So we immediately stopped everything. You know, we do the click list thing to get our groceries. So we pull up in a queue and they bring it out to the car and you don't touch each other and all of that all right. kind of stuff. And, it's been weird, man. It's been really weird. I think for us, you know, we grew up, you know, my wife and I, we were kind of in the punk rock scene. So I've always expected this at some level, but
exactly
at 46 years old, I'm kind of like, why now? Why not when I was 25 and I was really ready for it, you know?
Well, that's actually something I actually wanted to ask you about because you have two kids. Like, we were ready. I mean, just from our background of like, you know, screw the system or whatever, we were like just waiting for this. We lived through the Cold War and, you know, we were always expecting to get bombed by nukes. And, like, how does this, like, think about your kids. Like, do you think this, I don't think the world's going to be the same after this.
No.
And I wonder how the younger people, especially, like, the ages that you have, I mean, how is this going to resonate with them when it is all over?
One thing that's really interesting, and I don't want to put too much woo-woo on it, like, something was preparing us for this or any of that, but, like, my kids and other kids that are their age, like they almost live their life online anyway. They live their life in their bedroom. So it's affected them a little bit in that, like I said, we can't just go grab some chicken nuggets, whatever, but like their friendships have all been online. They're right. And again, because my kids are homeschooled even more so, they would have like a library meetup once a week that they're not doing now. And so they weren't really like seeing a bunch of other kids, but even my friends who have kids that are in the public school system, they go to school, they do their thing, they come home and then they get on their video game system and they talk crap with their friends on there. Or they don't even talk on the phone. They're texting each other. So there's a certain bit of this that I think the kids are really well prepared for. And like you said, like Generation X, we grew up ready for the bomb to drop at any minute. Like as soon as stuff starts happening, I go to like, okay, it's Red Dawn. I'm like, see Thomas Howell. I'm going to drink the deer blood. It's going to be on, you know, but what's weird is the way that we're kind of tied down right now by like something that we, you know, I always thought like my tattooing would be a great thing for when the shit hit the fan, I would still be able to tattoo people and make money on the, you know, in the underground or whatever, but like, you know, nobody wants to open their skin up right now, you know? So right, there's certain things that like, were really unexpected for me. Like had we been invaded by, you know, some outside force, military force, I would be way more ready probably than I am for this. But, I think, I don't know, man, it's real weird. I mean, I think about, you know, hopefully everything clears up. We get into summer and, you know, you see like any kind of viral infections that happen at the end of the winter, flu season and stuff, it'll have a dip and people will be able to move around a little bit more, but we're also have the potential of reinfecting. So 3 months from now, it's all done, and then we go out again and everybody's got it. Or, you know, it's really going to change things. It's funny, my parents, like my stepmom and even some of my grandparents, they were really picky about, like, when you would buy a soda pop, they would make sure to clean off the top really good, or they would bring in groceries in the house and they would wipe them all down like they were kind of freakishly clean. And I wasn't that way. You know, I talked about it in my live stream today. I grew up going to punk shows and eating out of dumpsters and stuff like that. So I've never been scared of any of that stuff. But now we go and we bring the groceries home and we bring it down onto the back porch before it comes in the house. And we're like Lysol wiping the outside of the packages and like cross-contamination control, like I have to do in the tattoo business just for the food we're getting ready to put in the refrigerator. So
actually something I wanted to ask you about too, like, we've been doing a every Thursday live stream, and what's cool is we're getting people from all over because I have friends. I moved around a bit, traveled, and like some of the stories, I know a lot of tattoo people, and are very aware of cross-contamination.
Sure.
And it seems like the general public is kind of like, oh, I'm just going to wear gloves and just keep wearing them and then touch everything again and like touch my face and grab my phone and then throw them into a parking lot or something, you know, once they're done. So you have a more of a knowledge of like that cross-contamination because you have to with your
body. Yeah. And even more so, like I'll go to the dentist and I'll see the dentist or the tech totally using their gloves wrong, and it gives me the heebie-jeebies. Or I'll go to the doctor, and they'll look at me and then hit their computer keyboard, and I'm like, "What are you doing?" And and I think it's because in tattooing, we're not only worried about the potential for hepatitis and different diseases and things like that, but we're also probably the stigma of what we do. If we had an outbreak of something like that, it could shut down our entire industry. So we're extra insane about it. Like I'll see an artist not thinking touch their paper towel roll with their gloved hand, and I'm like, throw that away. I know paper towels are expensive, but that's trash now. And with social media being what it is, like if somebody takes a selfie and our trash can is wrong in the background, they've got their lid open and it's supposed to be closed.
Oh, goodness.
You know, that can potentially make us look like we're not doing the right thing. And you're giving everybody AIDS or whatever. So,
and yeah, a tattoo shop is one of those places where you mentioned a dentist office. People are going to look at a dentist office and just assume whatever, but look at a tattoo shop with a more critical eye because it's tattoos, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a bunch of freaks, you know, getting tattoos, you know? So,
to a certain degree, I get it. When I started tattooing, I started professionally tattooing in 92, and there wasn't a glove. Like, we didn't have to use gloves yet. Some artists use gloves to like not have dirty hands. But like, and as far as how we cleaned things, like, you know, most of the cleanliness stuff, people started enacting on their own. Like, they wanted to build their business. Tattooing started to explode before there were laws in place. Like, once whatever the basketball players and Axl Rose had tattoos, then they were suddenly everywhere. So like, we were building the business without much knowledge. So like, we would have people go into a convention in San Diego to figure out how to be clean and how to sterilize things right and all of that. So like, a lot of us my age, and I guess I'm sort of one of the old guys now, but I don't feel that way, but we're at my age, we remember when there was no law and it was kind of Wild West. You could smoke in the shop, you could drink in the shop, you could tattoo without gloves if you wanted to. You would have shops that would do things like, well, if it's, you know, we'll keep your needles for next time and charge you less. And, if you guys, if you guys are together and you're already having, you know, unprotected intercourse, why not just share the same needles? You know what I mean? And
right.
Weird stuff like that. That was like a common thing in tattooing then. So to a certain degree, I get it, because we are kind of babies in the world of, you know, as far as that kind of stuff goes. But that, I think that's also been one of the things that's made us really super intense about it.
We were talking earlier and just kind of what you were saying, little off subject, but you're talking, I mean, this kind of goes back to smoking on airplanes with recycled air. And we were talking about today about seatbelts just in the cars. And I was like talking about how when I was a kid, I would stand up in the front seat.
Oh, yeah.
As a little kid, you know, I mean, my head probably didn't go over the top of the seat, and that was okay. No seatbelt, just standing there, you know.
And every adult had the right arm would fly up if they would hit the brake real fast. They'd throw the dad arm or the mom arm up to keep you from going into the windshield. There were a few times that I did go into the windshield.
My mom's nearly 70, and she still has that instinct. Okay, your business is shut down. Our business is shut down. This is really hurting us financially. Do you have anything to fall back on? What, I mean, everybody's looking, waiting for that $1,200 check, which is
slow.
Well, and that's if you're the kind of person that's been, you know, hip enough to file your taxes and everything.
Oh, right? I did. It's just not too late.
It is not too late if you have not.
Good. But, you know, there are a lot of people in my industry, especially, that kind of fly under the radar. My shop, everybody's pretty above board. We're a really visible shop. It's still, I mean, and who knows if that check's going to come? Who knows if it's going to cover anything? I have one of my artists applied for unemployment, and I think she's getting $238 a month or something like that, or I don't even know if that's right. Maybe it's per week, but it's a really, really, really ridiculously low amount of money.
Just enough to starve on.
Yeah. So it's, it was denied. My wife's telling me now that original thing that she was going to get that was measly has since been denied. So I don't know, you know, I'm in a position where I don't have to go run out and take a delivery job or something like that right now. But I mean, I think that's where a lot of people are going. You know, either going back to delivering pizzas or everybody's delivering stuff now. So you can go deliver for the local brewery or you can whatever. Or you go work at the grocery store. Those places are hiring for good money, but you're putting your life on the line to do it, you know, but you have to have money.
Your daughter had every single symptom,
yes,
like overnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she went through a process of trying to get tested, and
they ended up finding a sinus infection. Thank God. I've never been so happy. Infection. So she started antibiotics and was fine.
But like, the process was very 1984-ish. You drive up and there's people in face suits.
Yeah.
And they're putting numbers on your car. Yeah. And
you have to wear a mask.
Very time-consuming. There's a friend of mine that you guys probably know her. I won't say her name in case she doesn't want anybody to know it or whatever, but she's been pretty public about it. She was sick for several weeks with all the symptoms, and she was one of the first people through that line at UD to get tested. And it came back that she had a lung infection. It wasn't COVID, whatever, but it was scary. And it was exactly, it's very like 1984 weird ET suits with the, you know,
we were quarantining ourselves for 14 days when we thought that was happening. And it was a little stressful, we'll say. Stressful. Not only were we like dealing with the financial aspects of it, but then that comes up and whatnot.
My nephew is self quarantined right now. He was working at Meijer. I'm not even sure what town it was in, but near here somewhere, Kettering, I think, or I don't know. But anyway, he was working at a Meijer, and he showed up for work 2 days ago, and they swipe your temperature when you come in to work. And he had 101 temperature, and he had no other symptoms, but that fever was enough for them to send him home and suggest that he self-quarantine to see if symptoms develop. So he's, you know, a 21, 22-year-old kid stuck at home, kind of climbing the walls, waiting for, you know, the plague to strike him. It's scary every time you go outside. I mean, we go to the grocery store, and they bring it out to our car. We're not touching them. They're not touching us. But it's still that whole, like, you know, I know how disease spreads. I know how viruses spread. And it's, you know, they can coughed behind your car and you've got it. So we come home and it's two or three days of stressing every time we have to go out somewhere.
I always think that tattoo people like are kind of on the level of knowledge and caution as, you know, ER nurses, or maybe even mm-hmm. more so just because of the they're first to get critiqued.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Tell us about, so like I said, probably before we were recording, one of the things that even got this whole project going was you starting your live stream, and your first live stream was amazing. What made you just sit there and do that? Like,
I had a moment, and it was the day that we got the news that we didn't have any choice in whether or not we could work. And like I said, we had already not been working for a week. But when we got the word about that and sort of several other things compounded on that, I just had this really emotional moment, and I was kind of going crazy inside the house. And I don't like I'm a bit of an, even though I'm in bands and I do all this stuff, I'm an introvert. Like I process everything internally. And so I don't want anybody to see me having a hard time or crying or whatever. So I went outside, and it was kind of rainy, and you know, we live on this property that has a lot of property out back. And so I just went on a walk, and I'm like, I'm going back to the, you know, 9 or 10 year old me that would, you know, I'd get hurt by my stepdad and go down to the creek and look at rocks and moss and whatever. And I was going to that place. And so I was out there just looking at the moss and feeling the rain and just trying to be in the moment. And, I don't know what it was that made me decide to do it, but I decided that like I needed to share it. And so I kind of went on and I think in doing it, in like turning the phone on and just talking to whoever might be out there, a better part of me kicked in, the part of you that wants to like let everybody know things are going to be okay. And it was maybe I needed to hear that myself. And that was the only way I could do it, was by turning this machine on to tell it to everybody else. You know, I don't even know what the psychology was, but when I did it, I thought like, this is going to be one of the things that helps me get through every day. Is to be able to go in and just share what's going on, let people know we're still okay. You know, I've seen a lot of people, I have a lot of friends that are my age that think that they're badass entrepreneurs and everything. And they're like, we've got to pivot on our marketing strategy, and you've got to go out and keep your brand repped and all of this. Or they're immediately like, I'll sell my foot videos or my drawings or whatever I've got, you know, to make money. And like, I can't do any of that. We had initially, we set up like a PayPal thing so that we were going to do a drawing thing every night on our tattoo Facebook, on the shop's Facebook page, and get people to give us tips or whatever. But I'm like, I don't know if we're going to be alive in a couple of months. Like, I have no clue. Like, really, like, truthfully, that's been the thing for me, is like, to, like, you know, I stop and I look around myself outside, and like, this may be the end of the movie. Like, when you're a kid, you feel like everything's a movie and it's just going to end some way. There's some big thing that happens, and it's like, you get to a certain age and you realize that's kind of bullshit. But like, what a twist to the movie of the life that we've been leading, to suddenly, oh crap, here comes this virus. And like, I'm at the gate of the age that it's going to be really bad for me if I get it. My all of my family's, but you know, it's like I had a bill collector call me about a 10-year-old bill. These people haven't called me in 6 years probably, and they called me to try and collect on this bill the other day. And I said, I had a moment of compassion for the lady. I said, I know this has got to be a really hard job for you to do right now, doing what you're doing. But I have no idea if I'm still going to be alive in a couple of weeks. So why don't you call me back when this is done? You know what I mean? Like, so I kind of have this, like, I've always had a little bit of a distaste for the
whole thing. What was her reaction to that? I'm gonna stop you for a second. What was her reaction?
Dead silence. Dead silence. And then I hung up. I didn't
probably been cussed out.
she was, yeah, I'm sure she was used to getting hung up on or cussed out that day. But I went through the whole thing. Is this Chad Wells? Is this your social security number? I went through the whole thing just to see what in the hell could it possibly be that was worth calling me in the middle of this crisis, you know. But for some people, it's business as usual or more. I have a guy that I went to high school with that's now selling cases of masks and hospital gowns to private people, but he'll only sell 5 cases at a time. So it's like, and it's like $567 a case. Like, this guy's just making crazy. I know a guy that's selling heavily marked up medical PPE stuff. So it's a weird time. And I've always gotten, you know, I'm a Kiss fan. I grew up a Kiss fan. I get that you got to do the Barnum and Bailey. You got to sell yourself. You got to do the whole thing. But I also, you know, grew up on the Dead Kennedys and Minor Threat, and that you shouldn't do those things. So I have this distaste for that to a certain level anyway. And same just here. Right same now.
Here. Just to cut you off for a sec, same here. And like, we started our video production business, a year and a half ago, and we were on an uphill. We were starting to do pretty decent, but sure, this whole thing just, everything crash. We were working so hard on crashed down. And so we are doing a lot of stuff to try to stay top of mind, even though we can't do any work for anybody.
Right.
And actually that's been awesome for us. And been actually just cool because we're doing a live stream every Thursday, and interacting with people is actually what we need to be doing right now. I'm not talking about business people. I'm talking about the friends and stuff that tune in and they're saying what's going on in their area. And
I think the thing is that both things can feed each other. And like that was sort of the roundabout point I was probably going to make and I wasn't getting to, but it is that you do want to stay top of mind, because when this is all over, of course, we need to do business. We need you to come back, and we need to be able to open back up strong and all of that kind of stuff. But to go and try and do like advertising feels bad. It feels wrong. Trying to do things, it's like, please give me something. Like, I'm in a position where, you know, I'm not going to starve. I'm not going to, you know, the company that rents our space to us for our tattoo shop is like, hey, don't worry about paying rent right now. So, you know what I mean? Like, we're not facing any evictions or anything like that. Right. So, and I do know people that are in way worse shape that I would just feel terrible saying, you know, here, buy this single by my band, or here, buy this drawing I made this week. But yeah, I mean, part of it is that you do want to be like, you know, like Minor Threat, man. Like, we all gave Ian McKay like tons and tons of money because he did it right. This tape should not be sold for more than $5. If you find this cassette tape being sold for more than $5 anywhere, steal it. You know what I mean? Like,
okay, I did too. Yeah.
And so we made Ian a millionaire, you know what I mean? And like, and I think that's, so the things can go hand in hand. Like, you guys can right now be creating the artwork. The reason that you picked up video cameras and audio gear and all of that was to create artwork. And then as an adult, you figured out how to make money doing it. And that's beautiful. So right now, do the artwork and make these films and whatever it is you're doing, connect with your people and take care of your audience. And if we're alive when it's time to do business again, you know, you're going to be top of mind. You're going to be doing business again. So,
well, that's one of the things when she has been doing photography since she was about, you know, that tall. I've been doing video, but I've never been doing it for money. I've been doing it for, I mean, 2 VCRs and like pausing one and recording them. And she wanted me to step in and let's do video. And I said, I don't want to do it for money because I'm going to get burnt out. Really boring videos. And we started, and I found other passions within those videos. Maybe I might have to drink whiskey to edit this video that's really boring. Just like that. What I found now is during the shutdown, like after all that work of trying to build something up, is we're going to make a very uncensored documentary that you're going to be in. It's all going to be on Zoom. It's going to be weird, but it's going to be probably impactful. And it's not, it's going to be for free. We're not making any money off of it unless Zoom to sponsor us. We'll take their donation. But what I'm seeing, I have a friend in New York who I'm hoping to talk to. That's the epicenter right now. I want to, and she's going out every day and showing for her friends. And she typically has maybe 10 people looking at her stream who used to live there, like Lower East Side, Manhattan, C-Squat, that kind of thing. And she's just going out there to be like, this is crazy. This is, have a look. And I'm like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. You're just walking around showing how empty things are.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is. You're absolutely right. This is the time to be creative and kind of do that kind of creative thing.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting for the people that have been here long enough to remember stuff. Like, for instance, your friend out there, to know what New York was at the time of C-Squat and all of that, and then how it's become Disneyland since then, and then now it's empty and there are deers walking into Central Park, or not, well, they were already in Central Park, they're walking out of Central Park, you know what I mean? Like,
right,
there are animals taking to the streets again, like the hawks and the vultures and the birds and everything are very serious here, but like you're seeing these things in major cities where, you know, animals, they're wild boar walking in the streets in Japan, where it was just so glutted with people before now, that they couldn't.
We've noticed that too.
Now, I walk my dog. Now, okay, so I social distance no matter what anyways. Like, typically, a fun night out for me is I might grab a couple beers, put them in my backpack, grab a coffee cup, and I go walk down abandoned railroad tracks, go check out some abandoned buildings, take some pictures, do some video. You've probably seen some of that stuff I've posted.
Yeah.
Now, doing that recently with my dog, like, I don't have any social contact when I do this.
Yeah.
Except for the beer store. And we went out one night. I think we walked about 10 miles at a coyote encounter, a deer encounter, a skunk encounter. I was like, what are all these animals doing right here? Like, they've never been here before. And the less people, they're just starting to kind of creep in.
Yeah, we're right in the city. I can't believe that we're seeing, like, the deer we saw a couple of days ago. Like, why are they just so tame? Why are, they must be used to people, but maybe they're just used to having that area without people.
You know what? I remember it was about 15 years ago, a deer crashed through the windows of Pachia in the Oregon district. And it was like, how does this happen? And then I talked to people that were up at 4:30 in the morning going to work. And they're like, I see deer, you know, often in the streets of Dayton. They leave before the cars get, they hear the cars and they get out, you know? So, but now there's no cars all day. So we're seeing it not at 4:30 in the morning, but seeing it 4:30 in the afternoon too. I mean, the part of me that's totally misanthropic and thinks that humanity is actually a plague on the face of the planet and the animals have more rights to it than we do, I'm kind of stoked about it. But I'm also a dad with daughters, and I don't, you know what I mean? So I'm not quite as misanthropic as I used to be, I guess. But
how long they keep it extending, like the stay-at-home orders and that kind of stuff? Like, our economy is already going down. And there's a lot of businesses who kind of don't get it that people are, like, depending on that to just pay their bills. And there's a lot of exceptions being made right now. How long do you think this can actually go on? I mean, I think it needs to go on as long as it needs to.
Yeah.
But when is it going to get bad? Because that keeps crossing my mind.
So I'm already seeing stuff that's making me nervous. So for instance, I'll drive in to Dayton every couple of days to check on the shop, make sure everything's okay. And driving home two nights ago, the corner of Dixie and Needmore was a little Wild West. I saw several cars with no headlights going on. People are starting to look at you angrily. They're running the red lights. Like, people are starting to get a little edgy, and it made me, I mean, I've always known that there are, you know, people can be terrible, but I think that as those checks don't go into the bank, I think if those checks go into the bank for people, we're going to buy a little bit more time. If those checks don't go into the bank for people, I think you're going to see a whole lot of people going and trying to figure out how to make this work. I mean, it's only a matter of time before people get really, really desperate. And I would almost imagine that that time is somewhat upon us. I know when one of the things that we'll try and do every few days is we'll go for like a back country ride and we'll go down somebody's street and they're really looking at you like, what are you doing on my street? And people are letting you know, you know, I see within days of this thing happening, all of my like macho guy friends were posting pictures, cleaning their guns and things like that on the internet. And it's like, you know, everybody knows that that is a potentiality that could exist, is that this shit could get bad. But I don't know how long that takes. And I think that because we have this illness thing on top of it, it's not like, I think if they closed us down and told us to stay home for any other reason, there'd already be looting and fires and fighting in the streets. But nobody wants to get sick. Nobody wants to get that illness. So, you know, if you're walking down the street and somebody's coming up at you, you cough a little bit and they might leave you alone, you know? So I don't know. I don't know how it's going to roll out.
Well, that's such a good way to put it too. Like, yeah. Seriously, like, yeah, no one wants to go out and do that. You know, the crime, the looting, the robbing people because they're worried about getting sick. And this is,
yeah.
You were talking about the movie ending. This isn't the movie turned sci-fi and we weren't expecting it, you know?
Yeah. Yep. And, yeah. It's weird. It's really, yeah, really weird.
They're like, it was even last week on the first week of lockdown, they were opening up, grocery stores for elderly people early in the morning. Yeah. And I forget what county it was, but the sheriff in that county had to put patrols at every grocery store because people were taking advantage of the elderly in that hour.
Oh, yeah. They're targets. They're sitting ducks, man. If you drive down through Dayton right now, there's cops with their lights lit up, yep, on every major corner. In front of Don's pawn shop, there's been a sheriff sitting there, like not just a Dayton cop, but a county cop sitting there, because that place, they have security and they have gates and everything like that, but there's a whole lot of riches in there.
They got a store that with a storefront, but if you go upstairs, they got tons of other stuff too.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I definitely know a lot of people that are fully tapped out. Their bank is empty and they have nobody in their family or anybody to kind of help them out. We're lucky that I had a certain amount of liquidity in my business, that we had cash on hand that I was able to just, you know, let the accountant know that was going to be written off to me as a disbursement. And, you know, so we have, you know, our grocery shopping is like when I was a little kid. My mom was a welfare mom on food stamps and all of that kind of stuff. And it's that again for my kids now. You know, they're learning about that, not just having whatever they want. Like I said, we're in a place where it's, I don't have to worry about that. But my artists, I have several artists who just, they do have to worry about that. And a lot of friends of mine that don't have, you know, anybody they can borrow from, or they're not in a position to have had a business that they can kind of cash out a little bit and whatever. So, I mean, a lot of people there is no more time for a lot of people. There are a lot of people who are really only getting, maybe still having shelter based on the fact that the government has said that you're not allowed to evict them right now. But as soon as that is passed and they've got 2 or 3 months of bills that are going to be retroactive, they're going to be evicted. We're going to have, when the illness is gone, we're going to have a whole bunch of people being evicted or shut off or whatever weird thing it is. And
something bad, not too. Yeah, because, you know, people are being told, I know some people out in the West Coast who are being told they got letters from their property management companies, you don't have to worry about rent this month, but you will owe it. And there are people who are living paycheck to paycheck. So, I mean, how do you ever get caught up with that? They better be making payment plans. I mean, they better be allowing people to make payment plans. Otherwise,
I think that's one of the things that we're going to come out of this with. We're going to come out of this with a situation where people can't get caught up at all. And we're watching the government just print more money, but we still, like, why do we have to pay taxes if you guys can just print money whenever you want to? I mean, it seems like you have to have what, gold in a box somewhere to cover that paper, but if you don't, then why the fuck are we giving you 46% of everything that we make as a, do you know what I mean? Or 32% of what we make, or whatever the percentage is. And I'm all for putting it, I'll put in 78% of what I make if it's like Denmark. Do you know what I mean? Like if we're living like Norway or Finland, I'm all willing to take home 25% and put the rest in. But that's not what we get at all. We get shit for healthcare. We get shit for everything. And we put all this money in. So I think we're going to come out of this with a lot of people who are going to be hopefully just sitting down and refusing. You know, I love that everybody's working their asses off right now, the people that can. But when this is over and everything's okay, man, I'm going to, you know, fucking general strike. Sit down and don't work. Don't fucking do it. Don't put anything back into this system, you know, unless they can show us that they can take care of us and that everything that we've done to help build this thing for all these years, if it can work, then work. But if it doesn't seem like it's going to work, you know, and if it can work, then they're bullshitting us about something somewhere along the line, you know, so. I had to stop listening and watching a lot of stuff, you know, the stuff that I grew up looking at and listening to and the speakers that I followed and stuff like that. I kind of had to stop when my kids were born because I just wanted to not be angry and not be scared. Like, I'm just going to watch these kids grow and this is going to be a beautiful thing. But like, yeah, it's, the more you know, the more angry you're going to be. It doesn't, there are a lot of things, like the more I know about how a VCR works, the happier I am, I guess. You know what I mean? But like the more I know about how the government works, the more angry I am. I think that the culture of growing up in whatever we call punk rock, I think it imprints on your DNA in a way that other stuff doesn't. You know?
I think you might be right.
One of the things you were talking earlier about kids, I have a nephew who, what is he, 16?
He just turned 17.
Just turned 17, and he doesn't leave the house, ever.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's weird. Like, people are calling the cops on kids playing outside.
Right, yeah.
And I took him out for a long walk with my dog, and I was like, yeah, you got to go down this hill. It's kind of steep. You might want to grab onto that tree. And he was like, I don't want to touch that tree. And I'm like, what the hell is that? I used to climb trees way before. That is just a bizarre thing. I mean, it's good for them right now, I guess, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's great for them right now. I mean, think about if when you were 12 years old, you were probably building forts and playing in the creek and digging holes and doing all kinds of stuff. And then somebody says you have to stay inside, like, indefinitely.
That's called grounded.
Yeah, I know. It was absolutely a punishment.
I was out the window.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, kids now, it's just part of what it is.
Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Chad. If you want to hear more about his tattoo shop, go to
his website. Yeah, check it out, his website. Also, if you can find him, he has a band. Do check that out. His website for some really amazing tattoos is wellsandco.tattoo. So check him out. And we will be back shortly with yet another one.